Good evening, everyone. Tonight's talk is called Acts of Power. In 1993, a young couple in Glasgow was subject to a series of bizarre and frightening paranormal disturbances. Their two-year-old daughter's toys would move of their own accord. Banging noises could be heard day and night on doors and walls, and the young wife regularly experienced the sense of being held tightly around the neck. Thinking that they were being haunted by a poltergeist, they asked Gordon Smith, a psychic researcher, to visit their home. Smith himself witnessed an ornament float from a low table and land softly on the floor. Then a toy piano started playing all by itself. Thumping sounds started coming from the bottom of the living room door, and then the psychic heard a child's voice calling out, "Mama, Mama." A vision suddenly appeared in Smith's mind of a four-year-old boy with beautiful blonde curls and big blue eyes. He reported what he saw to the young woman, and instantly her cheeks went red and she started crying. The psychic then said that the little boy was asking for his toy elephant. Upon hearing this, the wife broke down completely, sobbing her heart out. Eventually, she managed to explain that 4 years ago, in a previous relationship, she had given birth to a little boy. The boy had died shortly before his first birthday due to a heart defect. The relationship ended, and all she had to remind her of her little boy was a toy elephant that she would hold before going to sleep at night. For one reason or another, she never told her husband about the boy. She had hoped to block it all out of her mind. What's so striking about this story is that all the phenomena that occurred were consistent with the behaviour of a small child. Objects being lifted from low tables, toys being played with, banging noises coming from the bottom of doors and walls, and the woman's sense of being held around the neck. All that was missing was the living, breathing child. Was the woman causing these events to happen? Was clinging to the memory of the child, combined with the violent repression of her feelings, creating enough force to generate a poltergeist? Now, it's not possible to say for sure, but interestingly enough, once she had admitted to her husband about the little boy and finally expressed her intense grief, all the paranormal events disappeared completely. The mind is a truly powerful instrument. The Buddha always said, "Mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief." The power to manipulate and control life in order to fulfill one's wishes has long fascinated mankind. When you think about it, everything we have ever accomplished first began life as an idea in the mind. If an untrained mind, like the young mother's, is able to invoke such incredibly powerful forces, how much more power could be generated and directed by a well-trained mind? Since time immemorial, man has dabbled in sorcery, magic, prayer, and meditation in the attempt to uncover the secrets of personal power. A modern variant on this theme is the intending circle, where a group of people come together in order to invoke the power of intention. The theory is that intention, far from being a personal matter, is in fact an infinite flow of creative energy, uniting the whole universe. Through the clear use of clear visualization and unbending intent, it is said to be possible to harness this flow of energy and, as a result, fulfill one's dreams and aspirations. Sounds like magic, doesn't it? A man joined a monastic community as a novice. He had been smoking tobacco for many years, and his first couple of months as a recluse was spent fighting his nicotine addiction. During his intense struggles with the withdrawal symptoms, he would repeatedly imagine being out on a walk and coming across an abandoned tobacco tin, replete with cigarette papers and a lighter. Again and again, he would dream this same dream. Oh, how nice it would be, he would think, to experience all those familiar sensations just one more time. Then, one day, while out walking, he happened to pass by a waist-high white post. To his complete astonishment, sitting on top of the post was an open tobacco tin, and inside was tobacco, cigarette papers, and a lighter, all just ready, waiting to be used. He couldn't believe it. His dream had come true. Unable, however, to accept that this came about as the result of his own mental actions, he concluded that it was probably just a coincidence. A few years later, and now a monk, he recounted the story to his teacher. "There," cried his teacher, "you see, magic works." Allen once said that being able to exercise personal power does not depend on understanding the mechanics behind it. What it does depend on is the skillful use of four qualities. These are the ability to visualize clearly in mind what we want, strong volition in order to will whatever it is into being, great mindfulness in order to visualize and will appropriately, and finally, the supreme confidence that the process will succeed. The only additional condition is that we need to be extremely careful about what we wish for. Imagine how you'd feel if you used magic to procure a large quantity of money, only to come into a small fortune left behind in a will by a relative who had died mysteriously in the meantime. If there is proper care with one's intentions, the development of personal power can be used advantageously and without harming others. In fact, it can open up entirely new dimensions to life. As meditators, we can also use acts of power to consciously propel us on our spiritual quest. A young woman travelled to India, intent on finding a spiritual guide. In a book she was reading, it explained how, by repeating a certain mantra, it was possible to create the necessary conditions for a master to appear. Being a faithful kind of person and feeling thoroughly determined, she took to repeating the mantra at every available opportunity. In due course, she met not one, not two, but three bona fide spiritual teachers. Her whole attitude was indeed propelling her towards finding a guide. Through visualization, which in this case included the repetition of the mantra, and her unbending intent, she really had generated the fulfillment of her wishes. Yet amazingly, she left India after 6 months, dejected, because she hadn't found her teacher. What went wrong? Looking back years later, she realized what went wrong. Undoubtedly, she had the personal power to find a teacher. However, at that time, she lacked enough personal power to place herself under their instruction. To put it another way, her ego had taken center stage and proceeded to convince her as to why each teacher wasn't right for her. If it takes such great determination and acts of power to find a teacher, how much more will it take to faithfully put their instructions into practice? Here at the centre, we place great emphasis on things like keeping the precepts, service, deferring to teachers, and upholding promises to attend classes, lectures, and retreats, and so forth. The reason being that to generate sufficient personal power to accept and implement instructions requires a reduction in our self-centered attitudes. The Buddha's teaching mentions the word power remarkably often. The five spiritual powers, the four roads to power, the six supernormal powers, the 10 powers of the Tathagata. The Buddha's intention with his teaching was singular: to show people how to free themselves from suffering, and in order to do so, he demonstrated how to develop true personal power. Through a course of mental training, we are guided towards greater mastery of our lives and the fulfillment of our wishes. Properly practiced, this kind of power harms neither ourselves or others. It brings peace and happiness to our everyday lives, is an entirely positive influence on the world, and ultimately offers an escape route from all possible forms of suffering. As a fundamental part of learning to be the master of the mind, the Buddha urged his students to practice and make much of 10 mental qualities, which are referred to as the parami, or perfections. It isn't possible for a detailed look at all 10 parami in the time available, but as we shall see, each time we do fulfill one of these virtues, we are performing acts of power. For the record, the 10 are generosity, ethics, renunciation, wisdom, energy, patience, truthfulness, determination, loving kindness, and equanimity. Such actions help us in letting go of selfish, worldly desires which drain our powers and assist in developing skillful modes of behaviour, all of which is in accordance with the way the universe really works. Understanding the rules that govern life and adhering to those rules generates the power of wisdom. The Buddha's teaching offers two complementary guides to reality, the mundane and the supramundane. Supramundane wisdom is all about understanding how life works at the level of ultimate reality. Mundane wisdom is concerned with how life works at the level of everyday life. And in essence, this boils down to understanding the laws of karma and rebirth. The law of karma states that our actions always produce a result, and that the nature of the result is determined by the ethical quality of our actions. Selfish actions based in greed, hatred, and delusion are mentally unhealthy, morally blameworthy, and productive of painful results. On the other hand, actions based in renunciation, loving kindness, and wisdom bring mental well-being, are praised by the wise, and bear happy fruits. If, for instance, a man envies what others gain, then as a result, the Buddha said, he will be powerless in the future. Conversely, as a result of an absence of envy at others' good fortune, a man can expect to be powerful in the future. If a man is wrathful and gives vent to anger, he will be ugly. If he is amiable, he will be beautiful. Stinginess yields poverty. Generosity yields wealth. And so it goes on. Remember that one of the factors needed for personal power is volition. And according to the Buddha's teaching, karma is volition. This knowledge can therefore open up a whole new dimension to our lives. We can begin to visualize and direct our energies in ways that will ensure increasing peace, happiness, and sense of purpose. It's quite magical to think that we actually have the power to largely create our own future in this life and, of course, in lives to come. Taking on board the reality of rebirth is also wise. It cuts away the tendency to think that we can ever get away without experiencing the fruits of our selfish deeds. Acts based in greed, hatred, and delusion always bring a gradual slide into powerlessness. Abuse of drink and drugs, for instance, can lead to slavish addiction and loss of reason. It can reach the point where we are no longer in control of the substance, but rather controlled by it. How many times have we heard the excuse, it was the drink talking? Freedom from attachment to gross sensuality is critical in generating and maintaining personal power. Living a life of ethical discipline by abiding by the 5 Buddhist precepts protects us and helps ensure mental well-being. Obsession with other people, either through wanting to possess them, control them, or get rid of them, is likewise leads us into bondage. To be so obsessed is to voluntarily hand control of one's life over to someone else, whether they wanted it or not, and to live at the mercy of their every whim. To illustrate, there's a story in the Pali Canon that the Buddha once told his monks. An ugly, pot-bellied goblin, it seems, had the audacity to sit on the throne of Sakka, king of the gods, while he was away. Sakka's attendant Devas were mortified by this outrageous breach of protocol. Yet the more upset and exasperated they became, the more and more handsome the goblin appeared. The more they vented their anger, the more he looked quite at home sitting on the throne. When Sakka eventually returned, he realized that this was a creature that nourished himself on other beings' anger. And we've all met people like that. To solve the problem, the king, with a heart full of metta, knelt down on one knee before the throne and repeated his own name 3 times. With this act of power, the goblin immediately lost all his influence. He regained his ugly demeanor and disappeared there and then. Performing wholesome actions, such as loving kindness, compassion, and generosity, always bring in their wake powerful and beneficial results, even if sometimes the act itself might appear quite inconsequential. Once in New York, a cab driver rushed round to hold open the door for his passenger because the passenger, he said, was the first person in the country ever to call him sir. An act of renunciation can also be very powerful. The novice who unwittingly brought that tobacco tin into existence wisely chose not to act upon his desires. It took a couple of goes, but he eventually wrenched himself away from the tin. He realized that he had no choice. If he indulged his craving, he would simply be reverting to the same old habit patterns he was so desperate to free himself from. As it turned out, that small act of renunciation was a major turning point in his fight against his addiction. So far, we have seen how, through the development of mentally skillful actions, we can become adept in the art of personal power. Understanding how to use visualization and volition mindfully and with confidence, we can perform feats of magic and largely create the world we want. What is it then that prevents us from being powerful all the time? To answer the question, consider this small example. Perhaps there's a job you want very much and for which you apply. But in your mind, you keep doubting and worrying, saying, "I'll never get it. I'll never get it." What happens? Of course, you don't get it. Why? Because even though you wanted the job, you actually kept on wishing otherwise. This is the province of what we call the hindrances, and they are aptly named as they certainly hinder people in reaching their true potential. Consider too what happens in meditation when the hindrances are present. At such times, is the mind powerful? Are we able to turn the attention effortlessly to the meditation object and keep it there? Not really. When sensual desire, hatred, or worry are present, we are slaves to self-concern. The mind is either dull and listless or full of pain and agitation. Mindfulness and clear comprehension are far, far away. Learning to dispel the hindrances is a further and more refined reduction in selfishness. Concentration can only arise when we finally give up tussling with the content of the mind. Choosing simply to remain attentive, we can watch as everything settles down of its own accord. By gently restraining passionate responses and goal orientation, the mind can very quickly become calm, spacious, and workable. Being able to remain alert and relaxed in a state of concentration is extremely efficient mental action and can lead to the generation of a far more intensive kind of personal power. Once the hindrances are allayed, meditators have a choice, either following the concentration route or the insight route. The way of concentration takes a great deal of mental agility, but is extremely powerful, taking us into the fixed meditations. Being able to absorb the mind in the meditation object has the effect of temporarily purifying the mind of all defilements, leaving it clean, equanimous, and mindful. Carlos Castaneda's teacher, Don Juan, once said, "Any thought that one holds in mind in a state of silence is properly a command, since there are no other thoughts to compete with it." Any visualization and volition that the meditator applies now has this same quality. This is the power of the quiet mind. There is simply nothing present in the mind that could interfere with one's wishes being fulfilled. With sufficient mental agility, the meditator can invoke what Buddhism calls the supernormal powers. Such powers include the ability to read another's mind, to relive past lives, and to meet and converse with beings from other realms of existence. Although dismissed by some as superstition, these mental phenomena are actually very common. For example, from time to time, everyone mentally picks up the mood of another. Have you ever gone into a room and immediately sensed anger or irritation, which you know is not yours? Most have. The difference between such a normal aspect of mind and a supernormal power is simply a question of the degree of concentrated attention and volitional control. By developing such personal power, our understanding of the mundane universe is as great as it can be. We have the ability to manipulate and control life to a very high degree. We understand what we must do for our wishes to be fulfilled. And so our destiny really is assured. Or is it? The pursuit and conquest of power, of whatever kind, can and does go wrong. Abraham Lincoln once said, "Nearly all men can stand adversity, but if you want to test a man's character, give him power." The lust for power has brought us the likes of Stalin and Hitler. And even at work, we find petty tyrants and bullies only too eager to let us know who's boss. As for mastery of mental powers, it's only too easy to slip over to the dark side of the force. For an example of how dangerous such powers can be, read the account of the early life of the Tibetan saint Milarepa. His career in black magic, fueled by the desire for revenge, reached its zenith when he destroyed an entire village with a single wish. The drawback with developing only mundane wisdom is that the underlying tendencies towards greed, hatred, and delusion have not been touched. These mental defilements cause all the evil in the world. They are still capable of exerting power over us and have the potential, therefore, to bring about our downfall. Instead of using the power of the quiet mind simply to generate worldly advancement, we can use it to produce insight into the ultimate nature of existence. Insight which, when fully matured, will destroy forever the ignorance that breeds greed, hatred, and delusion. It's funny to think that in this frenzied, power-mad world, the true mark of a powerful individual is his or her ability just to sit quietly, free from all concern, free from all attachment. But this is exactly the power that practicing insight meditation will give us. As we become more and more familiar with ultimate reality, and keep on noting the three marks of transience, suffering, and non-self, we develop a genuine dispassion towards worldly objects. Progressively, we cease hankering after life, and instead find that true contentment lies in freedom from acquisition. This dispassion is blissful and peaceful, and it has a power all of its own. Once, Mara, the devil of temptation, tried to seduce the Buddha into acquiring worldly power in an attempt to regain a hold over him. With his psychic powers developed to such a high pitch, if he wanted, Mara argued, the Buddha could turn the Himalayan mountains into gold. But of course, the Buddha was beyond temptation forever. Being free from all craving, hatred and delusion, no longer could he succumb to the allure of worldly possessions. Being free from all gain, he was free from all loss. This being so, he experienced no fear, no depression, no anxiety. He longed for nothing. Clinging neither to existence nor to non-existence, he was freed forever from the endless process of rebirth, and never again would he suffer old age, sickness, and death. He had found the greatest power of all, the power of enlightenment. There was nothing else he need do, no other action he need perform. He was at peace. The culmination of the Buddha's teaching is simply the realization of the way life really is. Our enlightenment will be no different from the Buddha's. The power that liberated him is freely available and ever present here in this moment. Each time we note that things do not last, we take a note of the truth. Each time we see that nothing exists independent of causes we see the truth. Each time we experience emptiness, we experience the unbelievable truth. To become enlightened requires us to develop the power of a quiet mind, the ability to focus our attention upon the nature of reality without bias, without judgment, and without self-concern. To do that requires training the mind, and the best way to do that is to perform acts of power throughout our daily lives. The Chinese philosopher Confucius said this, "I asked for strength and was given difficulties to make me strong. I asked for wisdom and was given problems to solve. I asked for prosperity and was given brain and brawn to work. I asked for courage and I was given danger to overcome. I asked for love and was given troubled people to help. I asked for favours and was given opportunities. I received nothing I wanted, I received everything I needed." The Buddha's teaching is showing us how to be masters of our mind and our destiny. We all have the necessary capacities, energies, and potentials to develop this power. And around us are all the opportunities we could ever wish for. If you would like a quiet mind, if you would like to experience the bliss and freedom of enlightenment, why not try performing some acts of power yourself? After all, what's life without a little magic? Thank you.